Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic, part of the continuing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Thank you for coming to the live show, or if you're listening here on the archive show, thank you very much for listening to the archives. But, of course, take some time on a Wednesday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern Time to come to one of the live shows where you could call in and be heard or participate in chat, or also visit the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And, of course, you can also check out the new Bard's Logic Political Talk page on Facebook. Just go to the search engine and put Bard's Logic Political Talk. And there's also a group there where you can join as well. Just ask me to join and look it up and put it in. So also, you could follow the show by coming here to Blog Talk Radio to the icon, and underneath the icon is a little follow button. Just click that, and you will get email updates on when the show will be airing and on the topics. And you can also contact me, the host, at the Bard's Logic Political Talks website contact page. So I look forward to hearing from you there. Now, tonight we're going to hear with some folks tonight about the TSA, the NSA, and the NDAA. And so please join us live to speak with the host, guests, and other audience members, and be heard. That's what callers and chat participation here on the show are always welcome. Now, I like what I did is open up with a little question here. What do the states California and Texas have in common? Now, that may not be much, but they're both fighting against the NDAA. And tonight on Bard's Logic, we will discuss the states and grassroots fight against the NDAA, TSA, and NSA. And here's a quote. Says, the fact that they, the government, relentlessly refuse to profile and be accurate and focus on people likely to kill us, and so instead they gather mounds of data about everybody else. Actually, I think weakens our ability to find the people who are the most dangerous. And, of course, folks, that is by Newt Gingrich. And so come and find out what's going on and listening to the rest of the show and hear about the government's infringements on our rights and what you can do to make a difference. And, of course, Bard's Logic Political Talk is the grassroots We the People show. And once again, on here in Blog Talk Radio, I've got a couple links where you can visit the Bard's Logic Political Talk Facebook group and also the page where consider liking the page as well and keep connected with other grassroots folks. And, of course, share the link to this show with your friends, family, neighbors, and others to get out this information. And these links can be shared through emails. And, of course, people can also listen to these archived on their smartphones, computers. So we can also listen to the download the link from here on Blog Talk Radio and then listen to the show in its entirety, which is usually two, a lot of times going on 3 hours. So they could listen to that at their leisure, whether in their car or on their phone or other sources. So tonight, I have on the line here to start us off is Nick from the 10th Amendment Center. So at this time, I will open up your mic. Nick, thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Really, thanks so much for having me on the show. These are the issues of the times. And when you talk about California and Texas having nullification in common, we know what the method must be of the times to use, and that's nullification. So I'm always happy to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something, you know, and that's why I mentioned about California and Texas, because when you think about the two states, especially politically, when we're talking, you know, red state, blue state, we definitely do not consider them to have much, if anything, in common, you know, especially politically. But we do finding some place that they do have commonality. And, of course, where we find that at the grassroots level.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole story of NDAA nullification across the country. And almost every other issue, every other unconstitutional usurpation that the federal government, you know, really, you know, power that the federal government seizes instead of any sort of thing that's delegated to it from the bottom up, from the people, every single move of resistance against the federal government ends up, or rather starts out as, a grassroots effort for nullification. Oftentimes it's not just your state magically discovering the 10th Amendment and as governor and state legislature, they all stand up and rise to the occasion. No, it's usually people acting at the most local level first, and that's what happened in California to get the NDAA bill here as far as it went. But the main thing to learn here is you don't have a voice in Washington, D.C. It's time to stop wasting your minutes on 202 area code calls. It's time to stop wasting your ink on paper that's just going to be wadded up and thrown in the garbage in a trash can somewhere in D.C. and not answered except, you know, by some automaton in an office, not even your representative. So if you're looking for real representative government, real small R Republican government, it's actually probably more likely than not going to start at your city hall, or if you're lucky enough, your state capitol, if you can go there first. But for California, there were four cities that were acting separate from one another, but ultimately coming together in pressuring their state legislatures on NDAA. There was the city of Fairfax, Santa Cruz, Berkeley, and San Francisco. And Los Angeles was lagging behind just slightly, but Los Angeles was involved too. And ultimately, what it came down to was our most red Republican in the California State Assembly, Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, picking up on this and ran on the California Liberty Preservation Act. It was a doctored version of model legislation that is offered at 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And what that came to be known as was Assembly Bill 351. And Tim Donnelly, a man who started out as a Minuteman on the Mexican border, went on to become an assemblyman in Sacramento, took this bill, AB 351, into the Public Safety Committee. Now, who headed up the Public Safety Committee but the most progressive Democrat in the state of California, the most closest to green commie in the whole place? His name's Tom Amiano, and a really nice guy, because he saw that by principle, this was a bill that had to happen, and it was in the right space at the right time, and it was the role of California as legislators to protect their citizens against a federal government that would seek to crush everything that the Bill of Rights stood for. So that's the role of your state officials, and they learned it through Tim Donnelly bringing this legislation forward. And so it passed unanimously. No one voted against it. And so you have these progressive Democrats standing with very conservative Republicans and libertarians in an active role, bringing them together on principle. So it was a beautiful cross-section that is ultimately championing what America should be about, which is holding government accountable. And that's more or less what it's going to take in Texas, although in Texas, it's a bit of a different dynamic now. They had to reintroduce their bill. Over there, it's HB 47, the Texas Liberty Preservation Act. HB 47 now is on the whims of Governor Perry. And people think that Governor Rick Perry is some tenther, that he's some 10th Amendment guy. Well, let's see. You know, it really shouldn't take this, but it is taking this. At 10th Amendment Center, we have kind of an action alert going out right now for people to call Rick Perry and to contact him and let him know that he needs to let HB 47 be added to the special session agenda before it just dies and comes back later. So in Texas, it's a bit tougher, but people have to take this time to call their governor and ask him to, protect their civil rights against the indefinite detention powers claimed by the federal government. And then in California, we've already passed our state assembly and are moving on to the state senate. But what's important is to know going forward, you want to gain enough credibility at the local level so that your state legislature can't hold things up like they've been holding things up in Texas and, frankly, too many other bills here in California.
And if you heard, right now, we've been concentrating on Texas and California, but what about some other states? Have you seen any action in any other states that you guys are working with?
Oh, yeah. The NDAA might have been the biggest issue. Next to the Second Amendment this year, it was probably the biggest issue. If you check out our tracking page, I'd love to tell you all the features of the new 10thAmendmentCenter.com website, but we have one section on tracking legislation, and there you'll see that 24 states introduced anti-NDAA bills that were set up to protect your rights to due process and habeas corpus, those rights that we sort of just take for granted, like no one's going to come after these rights. Oh, but they are. They're coming after you and your lawyer and your right to a jury and your right to question why you're being arrested in the first place. So these types of fundamental common law things that have been a part of society since Magna Carta are eroding all under the auspices of national security. And those are the words that you got to look out for, whether it's the TSA, the NDAA, the NSA, even the Second Amendment, all sorts of reasons that they will infringe on your rights. Usually, 9 times out of 10, they're calling it. They're saying their reasoning is national security, and we have to stop this national security state before it totally rewrites the Constitution. And we're living in Soviet America. So that's what we're looking to do at 10th Amendment Center. And whatever your issue is, it can be one of those three issues. It could be an issue entirely different, but the way you go about it and the methods aren't all that different. Now, nullification is just about finding those people locally who have a like-minded view of, that you do, and you take that one issue that you agree on. Even if you disagree on nine other things, find that one thing that you do agree on and work together. So you set other differences aside, you come together locally, you pass a resolution or an ordinance at the city or county level, and that's much easier than you would think. And once you get that far, you have this huge leverage with your state legislator, because you can say, my people have a list of demands here. And the legislator can't tell you that, oh, well, I'm with you, but it's just not the right time. Or I'm with you, but this issue is so controversial, I think we should wait. You know, if you can show them evidence that people in their district care enough, just by showing them a resolution passed by your city council, then that has shown a lot of promise in the activism that's really taken off just in the past couple of years. We did not see this kind of activity 7 years ago when the 10th Amendment Center was founded, but 7 years later, it's, you know, we're not going to be able to keep track of this stuff for long, it seems like, you know. I mean, it's just running wild that 24 states introduced NDAA legislation. So any state in the union you could bring up, and I could probably tell you where the nullifiers are and what their issues are. But it's everywhere.
That sounds good. Actually, that was kind of a good segue to my next question, if you had a list of those states.
Yeah, sure I do. Like I said, it's 24 states on NDAA. I could list them off right here. You know,
sure.
I could probably just guess off the top of my head and not get many wrong. But, yeah, let's go through them all. So on our map right here, you can go around and see that we've got all the way up there in Alaska, Washington, Nevada. Swing on over to the east side, and there's Virginia that actually passed their NDAA bill. Their governor signed it into law. So Virginia, way ahead of the rest of the country. But it being introduced in Oklahoma and Kansas and up through, you know, it's every single region into New England, where in Maine and Massachusetts. And let me tell you if this is New Hampshire or Vermont here. New Hampshire, okay. So you got to click around a little bit because those states are tiny. But, yeah, so we have an interactive map there so you can see the progress of the bill.
I love those interactive maps. You've done a lot
in the past election. Yeah, exactly. So you can see right there. And you can see it on the local level, too. So I shouldn't just talk about the state legislatures, but we also have a map showing you where the cities and counties are taking action. So that's even more interesting. You know, that's the fundamental thing about this is that these people at the local level, they don't have the, you know, they don't always have that gift that you get when you're living in Washington, D.C., and you can just associate with people who agree with you all the time. You know, you might be in a place where you're the only one who thinks that you have a Second Amendment right, or you might be in a place where you're the only one who believes in the Fourth Amendment. But wherever you are, if you're a true constitutionalist, if you're a true tenther or libertarian or however you want to characterize yourself, you can usually find a way to pull other people together. So here in California, yes, I very much believe in the Second Amendment, but what I have decided to do with my time is organize with people who believe in the Fourth Amendment and other civil liberties, and we went after the NDAA. Now what I get to do that'll be a lot of fun is call up these same people that I've contacted in the Los Angeles area and through California and see about, will these people stand with me on principle, on the same principle, and defend the Second Amendment rights. And then you make your case even stronger to those people on the left, when those people on the left might have been joining up with you to save a marijuana dispensary or to legalize marijuana against the wishes of the almighty federal government. Then you start to have a real conversation about issues instead of, you know, team red or team blue or team one or team two. Then you're actually getting real work done, and you're changing people's minds. And right now, with the NSA on top of the IRS scandal, on top of the Department of Justice going after the Associated Press, on top of the FBI secretly spying on antiwar.com, on top of all that, here's the NSA spying on everybody. And so here's a great opportunity where you can talk about, look at who's siding with whom. We've got Michael Moore and Glenn Beck agreeing with each other on one end of the spectrum. And then on the other end, you have John Boehner standing up there with Harry Reid. So, you know, it's like you kind of have to choose which side you're on now. It's not as clear as day like we might have thought. It's not left and right. It's the state versus you.
Yeah,
so that's really interesting. It's a new political dynamic coming up.
Strange bedfellows. And at this time, I do have one of the other folks are calling in, and one of the things I do here on the show is I keep everyone's mic open because we do a very good job here, people not talking over each other's heads. which, you know, you don't see on a lot of the other, you know.
Wait a minute, you didn't tell me you didn't tell me I wasn't allowed to talk over people's heads in the emails.
Sorry.
That's what
sorry,
I do. Yeah. I interrupt people all the time.
Well, I tell you what, during the elections we had shows, that happens sometimes, but usually we're able to keep it in much of bay. But, you know, you're watching Fox News or sometimes CNN or things of that nature, and they're always just screaming across the table, and I can't, I'm not a big fan of that. But I'm going to lend in a gentleman here, and he's actually helped me put together some shows, produce some shows. And he's also the author of A Hidden Fourth Branch, and also I would say expert on the grand jury, and that is Mr. Kellen Mordecai.
Well, hey, how you guys doing? I'm really glad to hear. I'm a fan of the 10th Amendment and, of course, the 10th Amendment Center. I'm just thrilled to hear this. Gosh, where do I start? Well, yeah, just to let you know, Robert and I did a series on state sovereignty, and that's some of my work there is on, you know, Hidden Fourth Branch, state sovereignty. You know, we went through some of the quizzes. When did states first become states? Well, that was July 4, 1776. How long did the federal government operate without an official name? That would be 2 years because the Articles of Confederation weren't ratified until July 9, 1778. You know, the Constitution wasn't formed until 1788, ratified 89, Bill of Rights 91. We kind of went through that history on the show here, and I had a huge awakening way back in 1995. Yes, 95, not 2005, when I was memorizing the Declaration of Independence, and I'm like, wait a minute. This is my own, you know, from the beginning part of the Declaration of Independence to the end. I memorized quite a bit of it. I'm like, wait a minute. Our state taxes should be more than our federal taxes. Something is upside down here. Something is wrong. How did we get here? Of course, since 95, I explored a heck of a lot more in the research things. But states are essentially sovereign. You know, we, therefore, the representatives of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United colonies are and ought to be free and independent states. And as free and independent states, they have full power to wage war, conclude peace, contract alliances, and to do all other acts and things which free and independent states may of right do, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. How can you more clearly state that the colonies were states? Then they created the federal government. Then they put restrictions in the Bill of Rights. And, of course, before that, they put number two, Articles of Confederation. Each state retains its own sovereignty except what was put in this document delegating to the federal government. I mean, how many ways past Tuesday did we explain that? And it's so, a person looks at the history, it's all there. It's all beautifully there. And so hearing this gentleman here moving forward in action, getting motivation, this is so inspiring for things I'm doing as well. I met Richard Thompson. He is the legislative director of Tim Donnelly. I met him about April 5th, and this is when the legislation was proposed, and it was headed to committee. I met him at the Libertarian State Convention. And basically, I followed up in their office the next week, and they said, oh, yeah, it passed committee 6-1. I'm like, what? They said, yeah. And so the field office is telling me that a couple of the liberals, I mean, California is obviously in their legislature liberal, but several of the liberals really liked it. ACLU. The ACLU got behind Donnelly's bill.
I know. They couldn't believe it.
Yeah, so we're having liberals and we're having true conservatives, those who love the Constitution, getting together and say, hey, feds, butt out. What are you doing? I wish I could tell people more about state sovereignty and how this is the way it is. We have a system now. We have to go after the IRS and get rid of it because, well, we do have a substitute. I won't go into that. But when the federal government takes the money from a state, then they turn around and say, okay, state, we're going to go ahead and give you some money back, but you must do A, B, C, D, and E.
Right.
Something is chronically wrong. And I'm going to guess these states that are starting to do the NDAA nullification laws are going to start to lose a little bit of federal funding.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's basically what happened with the Real ID Act. There are so many different examples where when the states just simply said no, they sort of, you know, the federal government likes to believe that, or likes to make other people believe that it can go out and do whatever it wants when and however. But actually, the federal government is very dependent on states and local help. You know, when you hear about a major drug bust, it's not just the DEA up there getting all the credit at the press conference. They're always saying, oh, and we really want to thank the California Highway Patrol. And then the California Highway Patrol says, we really want to thank the county sheriff. And the county sheriff says, we really want to thank the rent-a-cop who called us. You know, so it's like it goes on down the line. And when once you strip out all the all that undercurrent of support for tyranny and the people take back like more of a local level, they, you know, it tends to mend out a lot of the worst crimes that the federal government could have committed, so that now in California we get to celebrate the freedom of having the choice of buying medicinal marijuana, you know. So like if they shut down a dispensary, the dispensary gets to reopen in like an hour or two. You know, I mean, it's like almost a moot point. I mean, obviously, there are real infringements on our liberty still. It's not, you know, a libertarian paradise out here by a long shot. But what I mean is the federal government can't be everywhere at once. And if states keep saying no, then it just won't have the resources. It'll be nullified. That's what happened with the Real ID Act. And hopefully that's what happens when more and more sheriffs stand up on the Second Amendment, more and more states stand up on the NDAA. But, you know, these aren't people who are going to be listening to, you know, the important, the vital history of the United States that spells out this whole system. They're not going to come to the revelation that, oh, the colonies were states and then the states created the federal government. What's going to come down for them is just, you know, the practical issue of the matter. Like, there was a recent poll out from Rasmussen Reports, and people, 38% of Americans were in favor of states deciding their own gun regulations and the federal government butting out. That doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it was still less than half that were on the other side. It was 45%, and 20% were undecided. I don't have any doubt in my mind that the undecideds on the issue are going to be on the side of the 10th Amendment and nullification, just as it, you know, plays out that you can't trust the federal government or that the federal government's never going to do a good job like they do on the war on drugs. And then on the war on drugs, on marijuana, 57% of Republicans and 59% of Democrats both agree that the federal government shouldn't interfere where states legalize marijuana. So it's becoming a practical point to just say, man, the federal government can't get its act together. We better turn to the local level. And then there we are, you, me, the ones who have been in this fight for many years. We already know we have the education and the philosophy and the, you know, the passion behind the argument of nullification that revitalizes it and gives it a new spine and a new muscle. Because it's always been a part of the American system. It's always been a part of the American anatomy. But the American people haven't been awake to it. They haven't known it's an actual choice that they can make in their political lives. So now that they know they can make that choice, it's going to be a muscle that's reactivated, and it won't be atrophied anymore. It's going to be stronger than ever, and that's how you take back the country. But, you know, the people have to understand the people have to understand the nature and science of how politics works, of how the government works. And once you understand that, all the political party stuff is BS. You know, the Fox News, the MSNBC, that whole sort of divide, largely doesn't, it won't be making the decisions for people anymore. The establishment media is going to have to, you know, relearn their arguments, or that people are just going to turn it off and go somewhere else.
Kelly here, I want to throw something out. Well, the basic problem with government comes down to a simple joke. What is the difference between God and a government agent? God doesn't think he's a government agent. That's what it comes down to. Yeah, men want to have power. I mean, I've had multimillionaire clients that do engineering business. I don't know why. Once they get a bunch of money, they want a kingdom. They want to control things. That's in the private sector. And so your government agents, they just want to make more power, more bills, more whatever. You know, it's out of control. And so Thomas Jefferson said it brilliantly. He said, let no more be said about the corruption of man, but bind him down by the chains of the Constitution. It's all there. It's like we got to stop this federal government and all be all of everything, because this is where our problems are. Ultimate power corrupts ultimately. Well, the corollary to that is real simple. Take away the ultimate power, you won't have ultimate corruption. So, I'm just a big fan of yours and what you're doing, and we've got to keep understanding our history, and that's why I put it even little spreadsheet tables on the history. Let me ask you a question here. How many colonies had a state constitution approved prior to July 4th, 1776?
Oh, man. I wish I was Robert Nadelson. I wish I was Tom Woods, but I'm not. I don't know.
No,
okay,
neither
the
answer is
four.
I don't know the answer to
those
either.
I'm still discovering great goodies about our history and what the founders were thinking. Of course, the ultimate goal is limit the federal government, let the states handle whatever they need to handle. But the correct answer is four colonies. It started in January of 1776 in New Hampshire. They approved a state legislature. And then along came South Carolina, I believe, in March. And then came along Virginia in, I think, May or June. And July 2nd, 1776, 2 days before the signing of the Declaration, New Jersey came along. So four states. I mean, could you imagine the press of those days? I mean, of course, you had Thomas Paine's Common Sense. You had other orators. John Adams was at it. Samuel Adams. Samuel Adams used to go to the bars, and he was just a real rabble-rouser. But he was, you know, we got to get revolution, but the heart and soul of it, we're ready to rock and roll. So in January, it came out, oh, my gosh, New Hampshire, what? The colony had a state constitution. Wait, they're not even a state. Along comes Virginia, South Carolina, and then New Jersey. The heart of it, they were there, and they finally signed the Unanimous Declaration, becoming sovereign states. Who has seen this before? I mean, our history is golden in understanding. And I want to ask you about, was it Wyoming, Montana? I get the two confused, but one of them passed a law that said, you can, I actually read the legislation, it's beautiful, it's simple, it's clear, brilliant writer. You can own a gun, or see, you can manufacture a gun in this state. You have to stamp, I think it was Montana, stamp Montana on the stock. No federal ATF involved whatsoever. It doesn't cross state lines. Then the feds get involved. No ATF involvement at all. Well, the feds responded, and it passed. And other states have been working on similar things, just with gun ownership and gun manufacturing. But the feds stepped in and started hammering some of the ATF was hammering some of the gun dealers. Do you know what the status is on this? But I know it passed.
Oh, yeah. In Montana, these are called the Firearms Freedom Acts. And what their purpose is to get past this baloney argument about the Commerce Clause in the Constitution. It's sort of a roundabout way of it, but the thing is like, okay, if you're going to define the Commerce Clause as anything that crosses a state border is now under the jurisdiction of the federal government, and the federal government can tell you how, why, and where, and when to cross that state border. That's what the federal government seeks to do. Well, Firearms Freedom Act just says, you know, you build it and own it or trade with it within your state, then all federal regulations are null and void. So it's the Firearms Freedom Act is very good for that. And I think actually maybe both Wyoming and Montana, you might have hit upon a double whammy here. I see here that the Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act differs from the original Montana model in that it establishes potential state penalties for anyone arresting a Wyoming person making or selling firearms. So it looks like the Wyoming one might even be stronger than Montana's. I like to see that, you know, when you hold people accountable by the sheer force of law, it's speaking like a whole new teeth into the bill. Like in California here, the NDAA bill started out talking about arresting federal agents for kidnapping if they tried to enforce the NDAA indefinite detention, you know, anti-terrorism laws. They would be, charged with kidnapping and maybe arrested by a state or local official because everyone's equal under the law. And that part did get taken out. Which I think was fine, ultimately. It still sends a really clear message about where California stands on indefinite detention, but you love to see those bills that are really strong, and it looks like Wyoming's Firearms Freedom Act is one of the stronger ones. So you're right. More and more states acting that way on firearms, it's just going to be, you know, an act of theater whenever the federal government tries to infringe on the rights. It's going to be impossible. And by the time they come up with a plan, 3D printers are going to be in all our homes, and we're going to have guns. And so, you know.
yeah. Well, I've read two things about Tennessee. You can probably confirm this first one.
I see now that Tennessee passed one, Wyoming and Montana and South Dakota and Idaho and Utah and Arizona and Kansas and Alaska. But I just wanted to list all of those real quick that passed Firearms Freedom Act.
Yeah, well, Tennessee also, I believe it was Tennessee, passed a law that any federal agent that confiscates a gun has committed a crime and will be prosecuted under Tennessee law.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the things. And then I read another story. I called up a buddy, and yeah, he confirmed it. But there were some Department of Homeland Security vehicles. They have their own police force now, which Robert can tell when he went to the IRS protest with the Tea Partiers there in Cincinnati. But they have their own vehicles. Well, there was a short train of DHS vehicles coming into Tennessee, and the governor ordered the state National Guard / militia at the border, stopped them, and they said, "You guys ain't coming in the state. We don't care who the hell you're from or who you're with or if you're federal badges. We don't care. You get your ass, turn around, and you get your ass that truck, you turn around and go back to Kentucky." And they did. I confirmed that with another person, and he's like, "Well, that's kind of old news. Didn't you hear about this?" Of course, you don't hear about this on Fox.
No, you don't even hear about it from Rush Limbaugh unless Walter Williams is subbing in. Maybe Walter Williams will mention it once in a while. But what's really funny to me, since we were talking about Wyoming, is when you talk about state or local people arresting federal agents, a lot of people who call themselves liberals, I don't know where they get off calling themselves liberals, but they would be horrified by this vision that federal agents would be held accountable to the Constitution by state or local law enforcement. But in Wyoming in 1859, in the run-up to the Civil War, the federal government had laws passed called Fugitive Slave Acts. And the Fugitive Slave Act said if a piece of property sprung up legs and escaped from the South and ran into the North, then that piece of property better be returned to its rightful owner, the white man over there. That white man owns that black man, according to the federal government. And in Wyoming was where, Glover, Daniel, I think it was Daniel Glover was his name, a runaway slave who made it to Wyoming, and the federal agents tried to come in there and take him back. And the people of Wyoming wouldn't stand for it. The courts wouldn't stand for it. And, you know what? It's Joshua Glover is his name. But I think there's an actor named Danny Glover. But,
Danny Glover, okay, yeah, the actor.
Yeah. So that's not awkward at all. But, okay, so the slave's name was Joshua. Big deal. So Joshua Glover.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's the
story that matters, right?
So it's Joshua Glover who, was being protected by these abolitionists, or at the very least, people who said, what right does the federal government have to tell us how to enforce our rules? And they arrested federal agents for kidnapping, for trying to kidnap poor Joshua Glover, who was just trying to have a few free years in his life. So, this principle of nullification was used against slavery. It was never used to promote slavery at all or to defend slavery or, much of anything evil. Usually nullification is used for good things. And people have a sort of modern memory of the Democrat governor, George Wallace, who was saying he was going to nullify federal, Supreme Court rulings on Brown versus Board of Education, and he was going to keep his state schools segregated. And so people sort of have a racist view of what nullification would be or mean. But it's funny because the left does nullification better than anyone. The left has marijuana laws all across the country. You'll actually see it where a left blogger will, they'll write a blog up about how great marijuana legalization is, and then the next week they'll say how horrible nullification is. And it's kind of funny they don't get that that's what they're doing. And
there's two more stories I want to add regarding nullification. Wisconsin had a similar situation where, a slave human being like you and me, he fled up into Wisconsin. He has equal rights.
Oh, it's Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, yeah. Yeah, it was Wisconsin. No, that's okay. But, yeah, Wisconsin, they're like, hell no, feds, we ain't turning. He's a human being. We're leaving him. You guys butt out of our business. We're protecting him. We like the guy. He's a human being. Get out. And then the other story was Pennsylvania. There was a very strong federal government. It wasn't the federal government. It was the British Crown. Pennsylvania passed a law, and I think it was 1760, saying, look, we're done with the slave trade in this state, okay? We're done with that. We in the colony say slavery ownership is illegal. We're setting the slaves free. They're going to be equals with us. And King George says, nope, sorry, I'm nullifying that law. It's like, no. We're going to ultimately nullify you by kicking you and your men off of our continent. So without the declaration, the slaves in Pennsylvania wouldn't have been free as soon. Of course, British eventually ended the slave trade thanks to William Wilberforce, the MP in Parliament, it was early 1800s. The colony said, we're done with it, but still, the end-all, be-all, King George, Obama, I'm sorry, am I having a Freudian slip there? it's so important to understand our history. It's so important to say, look, we got sheriffs that can arrest federal agents, we got the states that can say no to the federal government, and eventually, when you look back enough, you look at the colonials who got together and said, King George, get off our continent. And there was, speaking of state notification and arrests, posse comitatus, the county south of me, I'm in Siskiyou County, south, just south of the Oregon border, Mount Shasta area. In Tehama County, Sheriff Rob Hurd, when he was sheriff there, he got two instances where one of the locals said, these federal agents here, and they're doing this and that, and he shows up, and he says, I'm going to give you guys a half an hour to get out of my county, or I'm going to have you arrested. Ha, 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 you're just a sheriff. You call your boss, you have a half an hour, you're in my jail cell. They called This is personal testimony directly from former Sheriff Rob Hurd. They called their office right away on the cell phone. They kind of what? And they got in their vehicles and they skedaddled up in Klamath Falls, Oregon, which is just right to the northeast of us here. The sheriff actually arrested a federal agent. The federal agent's like, oh, yeah, you're just a sheriff. You're just this local schmuck. And he reached for the guy's gun, and the sheriff just grabbed him, arrested his ass, threw him in the slammer. And this happened within the last year.
Yeah, I mean, these stories are going to be more and more prevalent. I mean, I would like to think that we don't need to come to any level of violence whatsoever. What we need to come down to is just a level of understanding that prevents these confrontations. But all in the same, if there were to be a confrontation, you know, if we're leaving that up to the local cops versus the federal cops, let them harm and hurt each other. But we, the people at the grassroots level, like, what we have to concern ourselves with is educating each other. You know, all of this is, we're going to make so much more progress out of educating each other and leading by example in our own communities. That's how we're going to change the face of the country. If one of these people who are, you know, so arrogant with their federal power or even their local power, you know, if they're going to abuse that, then I want to see, you know, I want to see justice brought to that person, obviously. But you know, the whole focal point here has to be education about what a free society looks like, or what a society at the very least that calls itself a constitutional republic, what that looks like. And it has to be, you know, it has to be people coming together and talking and deciding which issue they're going to tackle, you know. And it is a matter of, you know, deciding what is most prudent and what is most demanding of the times. So after this NDAA success here in California, or at least the success that we've seen so far, our fight is not over. But after that, I'm looking forward and seeing, like, okay, what should we stake out next? Is it time to talk about the Second Amendment again here in California, now that we've got many more people on our list of friends who we've worked with on the NDAA? Or is it time to talk about the Patriot Act? Because a lot of other states are talking about the Second Amendment, but who is standing up against the Patriot Act? Maybe that's our time here in California to do that. So it's a very exciting time to be active, and that's why it's just a mind-blowing experience. I mean, even like a part of the 10th Amendment Center, you know, because I remember just reading about the 10th Amendment Center in Tom Woods's book, and then thinking to myself, wow, I never knew they existed. And I went and checked, and they were based in Los Angeles, where I live. And I was like, how is the 10th Amendment Center based in Los Angeles? That's just hilarious. But so, I mean, it's just really amazing where things are going now. The momentum is really building, and it's really fun because you can't predict where each and every community is going to draw the line and on what issue they're going to draw the line for. So, the most important part of all, the one lesson that unites it all, is that people just are going to shrug their shoulders and not really care what the federal government does. And the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is indifference. And the people in federal government can't deal with it, man. They can't deal with it if you ignore them. You know, that's the worst thing you could do, is ignore them. The federal government is always trying to stir up fear so that you pay attention to them and their solution to the fears that they manufacture. So the moment that they become irrelevant in the masses' eyes, that's their worst nightmare. And so that's the other beauty that nullification brings with it, is that when the federal government says we can't do something, we do it anyway.
Okay, gentlemen, I do have two things here, and I hate to interject there, Kelly, but sometimes I must. I've got two things. One, I've got someone from the chat who would like to ask, what do you guys think of Governor Scott arresting the sheriff who set the guy free who had a concealed weapon? And also, I have to answer this. We do have some folks in the line, and then we have Joe, who's from Montana, who's waiting to come on. And, Joe, I'll be letting you on, as I said, in a few moments, but let's get the question answered, and then after you guys tackle that, we'll bring on Joe. So go ahead. And, again, the question was, what do you guys think of Governor Scott arresting the sheriff who set the guy free who had a concealed weapon? Go ahead.
Well, you know, in the sense that we've been talking about how states created the federal government. It's not the exact same relationship when you're talking about cities and counties versus their states. It's not the same to say that cities and counties created the state. Usually it's the state that allows a city government or county government to operate or institutes those governments to operate. So if the sheriff is operating under the authority or under, you know, I'm not an expert in Floridian law or any law. You know, I understand the Constitution better than anyone on the Supreme Court. But, you know, as far as Florida law, it gets technical. And I would just say on principle, Governor Scott, I mean, is clear as day. You can see right there that Governor Scott doesn't care about an individual's right. He cares about, you know, his ability to stay in power and to climb that ladder. I'm sure Governor Scott would love to be a presidential candidate or move on up somewhere, you know, in the power elite, you know, instead of actually looking at the situation as a, you know, a right to carry. So, you know, if a sheriff has humanity in him at all and lets this man free, you know, that humanity that glimpses through that sheriff is going to offend someone who's an automaton bureaucrat like Governor Scott. And unfortunately, in the times we live in, Florida needs a new governor. What can I say? But what can be done? Maybe if the sheriff goes on trial and gets a jury, maybe the jury will nullify. You know, that's a whole other nullification we haven't talked about, is individual nullification, and that might have to be the answer there.
And that's definitely something I would like to hear some elaboration on tonight or even on another show. But Kelly, go ahead and if you can answer that, and we'll bring on Joe.
Well, there are some points. It's a different, and I never thought about it that way, but there is a difference because, well, at least in California, there's, you know, municipal codes, et cetera, et cetera. The state is saying, okay, cities, you want to be a city, you must do A, B, C, D, you must. So anyway, yeah, you've got a point. I would love to have some brilliant legal scholar explain how it works when the state issues nullification. Okay, it's good, but at the other times, the federal government's got to step in, say, for example, an amendment to terminate slavery. You know, I would like to see somebody discern when these powers are invoked. However, there was the famous Prince versus U.S., which, you know, Mac is talking about. Prince and Mac were before the Supreme Court. Well, Justice Scalia stated about state sovereignty. We, in this country, we have a system of dual sovereignty, states versus the federal government, to keep each other in check. And more recently, Bond versus U.S., I believe it was Indiana, again, the states' rights were confirmed. And in Bond versus U.S., or, I'm sorry, United States versus Bond, she pled guilty with the right to appeal. What she did was Ms. Bond found out that her husband got her best friend pregnant, and she was furious with her lady best friend, started putting hazardous chemicals like sodium hydroxide on doorknobs and, you know, window latches, wherever she could, because she was just subtly retaliating. Well, the state didn't do a damn thing about it, didn't really prosecute, because, you know, it's kind of a petty thing, not a serious injury, and they understood, but they didn't really prosecute. And so the neighbor, her best friend, went to the federal government because she found out that Bond was dealing with an illegal substance on the federal level. If you have any hazardous material, which, by the way, Clorox bleach is a hazardous material. if you have a hazardous material, how do I know? I mean, I do environmental consulting, so I know what hazardous material is. All right. If you have a hazardous material You can have it, own it, like to do your laundry. You can have it as long as you're not going to do any kind of terrorist activity with the hazardous material. And so this lady wasn't getting, quote-unquote, justice in her mind for her fingers being burned while she's carrying her girlfriend's husband's baby. Right? She went to the feds. Then the feds came in. Oh, my gosh, took bond, threw her ass in jail, or they were prosecuted to the full extent of the law and all this stuff. And it made it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court issued a ruling to immediately release bond. Why? Because Indiana didn't ask for the federal government's help. The federal government overstepped their boundary in prosecuting bond. So I'm like, whoa, this is huge. So in other words, the federal government doesn't have jurisdiction unless the state asks in a petty crime of putting chemicals on a doorknob. Oh, my gosh, this is huge. What that told me was, again, the Supreme Court has spoken. The federal government doesn't have jurisdiction. Of course, that's in Title 46 and 255 of the U.S. Code, Interpretive Note Number 14, that the only way the federal government has jurisdiction, this is from Eisenhower, by the way, the only way the federal government has jurisdiction is if on a particular piece of property, the only way the federal government has jurisdiction is if they approach the state and the state legislature says, oh, you would like to have a federal building here? Okay, yeah, we're fine with that. You want to put in a federal building? But the legislature approves it, and then it's recorded with the Secretary of State. Then the federal government actually has jurisdiction because the Constitution said the federal government has what kind of jurisdiction? Oh, that's right, a 10-mile square area, in which would be Washington, D.C., ports, enclaves, and other buildings as necessary for, you know, for the public interest. That is right there in the Constitution. And that's what the federal jurisdiction is. And Eisenhower saw, of course, he warned us of the military-industrial complex, but Eisenhower wrote a bunch of papers, the famous Eisenhower papers on the federal government. And it was like, oh, my gosh. Wait. We got a president? What, is he like Thomas Jefferson or Washington? Obviously he was because he defined, even on federal lands, he said, okay, depending on the jurisdiction, is this, in this situation. The federal government is not the end-all, be-all. And Eisenhower saw that, and he stuck in, and he got it approved in Congress, Title 40, Section 255, Interpretive Note Number 14.
Real quick, we'll continue. I do see here that it looks like we lost Joe from Montana if we got disconnected. But if you'd like to call back in, Joe, we'd still like to hear from you. So, and of course, anyone else out there you'd like to listen in or chime in, you could call it 347-945-7428. Thank you very much, and we hope we hear back from you, Joe. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah, so anyway, Eisenhower had something figured out, and he wrote extensively about it, stuck in the statute. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, where did he get – oh, that's right, he just happened to read the Constitution, happened to know it, live by it. He did some really good things. We lose everybody?
No, I'm still here. You tell it.
Yeah, well, I just found an interview of that sheriff that was referred to in the question out of Liberty County. I mean, geez, you can write a better story than this, right? It is actually Liberty County in Florida where the sheriff Nick Finch was arrested, and there's going to be a rally in support of him on June 14th at 11 a.m. in Tallahassee. He says that he did nothing wrong, that he violated no state law, and that he upheld the Constitution, and that he would do it all over again. So, and if it takes it, he'll go to the Supreme Court, and my fingers are crossed for him if that happens. I don't know if that's the best strategy or not. But, so there is an interview with Nick Finch on this, and he's not allowed to talk about the case too much, But how interesting if like that's true that he didn't break any state laws, then yeah, I mean, because I thought maybe he let a guy go who technically broke a state law, but it's not against the law for a sheriff to show reasonability or humanity or something. Maybe they haven't outlawed all of humanity in Florida yet. We'll have to see where his case goes. But it's an interesting dynamic. People ask that a lot. You know, when you go around and talk about how great the 10th Amendment is, you get mistaken, and people think that you're championing all the governors and all the state legislatures for who they are. And no, far from it. You know, those really have to be reworked as well. But at least in most of the country, you know where your state legislature, where your state legislator lives. At least in most of the country, you have more access to those legislators. So, you know, that's why we tell people to start local first. It doesn't mean that we think that state and local governments can do you no harm, or that they're always going to be on your side, but that, that's the way we were supposed to be operating all this time. And decentralized power is much better than centralized power. So,
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
How in the world are these people, like Governor Scott, how in the world do these people ever get there? I can't figure this out.
How do they get there? Well, that's quite a question. Well, I would just say that those types of people are attracted to those kinds of jobs in the first place. I don't know what Tim Scott did before he was governor, where he was in the private, private world out there. But most of them don't, you know, they're not interested in working for anyone else but themselves, but they have a sociopathic tendency that allows them to play off of the sort of norms and interest of the everyday mass man and mass woman. And, it's a lot of emotional play, and they ultimately get elected. Like, you know, and usually it's not a great many number of people even supporting them. You know, like just a few weeks ago, we elected a new mayor in Los Angeles. No small task there. It's a big city. But how many people actually voted for mayor in Los Angeles? It was a 15% turnout, 1-5, 15% turnout for the vote for mayor, and he barely even won. So that means, like, what, 8% voted for him? And out of that 8%, how many were just afraid of the lesser evil? So maybe 4% of all of Los Angeles stands firmly behind its new mayor. And in the meantime, 85% of Los Angeles voted for no government at all. So obviously I'm in the majority of the 85% voting for no government whatsoever, but our vote doesn't count. You know, they say it's one man, one vote, but apparently they only count the votes of the people who walk in there and fill in little circles. But if you were to ask me, we should count everyone in the society and see how they all, you know, voted with their feet. And it looks like 85% of Los Angeles didn't want a mayor, and we ended up with one because 15% decided to go out there and oppress the rest of us. But, that's what happens, is you end up with choices that are largely fronted by powerful interests who want to utilize that state power. You know, first the government makes all these promises to the people. In order to keep all those promises, it needs a lot of power. And then the people who chase after that power are the ones with all the money. So the people with the money end up owning the government, and the government works for those with the money. And that's, you know, that's just kind of the cycle you end up in. But I would say that the root of the problem isn't people with a lot of money at all. The root of the problem is the people believing that their government has legitimate power when it's just empty promises that turn into tyranny.
Well, Abraham Lincoln said, you know, in his famous Gettysburg Address, of the people, by the people, for the corporations. I mean, sorry, of the people, by the people, for the politicians. I'm sorry. What did he say?
You know, there are a lot of fake Abraham Lincoln quotes out there. I'm just as well to assume he was a mute.
Well, actually, I memorized the Gettysburg Address. That this nation, conceived in liberty, shall have a new birth of freedom. The government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth. That's what he said. But, of course, if you listen before, I joke around and I kind of misquote people. And I throw on humor because, you know, without humor, what's the point of living? Anyway, I wanted to tell you about a politician, a couple of them, actually three of them. They failed, okay? They failed the simple 10th Amendment quiz, all right? So here I am in my office, still engineering, we're going to project, da-da-da-da-da, and his office complex, and this guy walks in. It's like a mini mall where I'm at, so it's kind of comfortable. This guy walks in, and he just kind of walks in. I'm like, oh, okay, could this be a client? And I was like, well, hey, I'm such and such, and I'm running for county supervisor. Oh, okay, well, yeah, you know. And he starts giving a spiel. I mean, this is small town stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the time. All right, you know, who are you? I don't know. And he's giving his little spiel. And I said, wait, hold on a second. I just got one question for you. Can you tell me about Article 9 and 10 of the Bill of Rights? Oh, I really like the Constitution. Yeah, the Constitution's really good at it. No, sir. I didn't ask you that. Can you tell me what Article 9 and 10 of the Bill of Rights are? And he goes, no. Sir, the 10th Amendment basically says that the rights not delegated to the federal government are retained by the states and the people. And, sir, because you didn't know that, you have no business. I mean, I was this harsh with him. You have no business running for office, okay? You have no business doing this. Now, this other guy, Tony Antiso, he knows this. He knows this full well. I'm voting for him, okay? And then there I am again at Tea Party in Mount Shasta, and what's his name? Jerry Reed. He was, like Harry Reed, but it was Jerry. He was an attorney from Weaverville, a little small town, and he was a Democrat running in a highly Republican district here in Siskiyou County. He was running. He was at a Tea Party. We're not apolitical. But, well, you know, and so he was there, a Democrat, giving this spiel, oh, I believe in this, I believe in that, da, 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 da. And I said, question and answer time. I said, sir, do you know what the 10th Amendment is? Can you tell us about the 10th Amendment? And he goes, oh, you know, I really, really like the Constitution. It's a really good idea. No, sir, I didn't ask you that. Do you know what the 10th Amendment is? He's like, I studied constitutional law in college, you know, in law school. Great. Then you should know what the 10th Amendment is. I mean, I'm cornering him. I'm just, you know, I'm hammering him here. Just subtly, not so subtly. Anyway, and he goes, I think it's something about equal protection or something. I says, no, sir, you failed. All right. And let me tell you the story. And I went back to the story I told you about the guy came in the office, and I said, and I pointed to the ground in anger, no, sir, I will not vote for you as supervisor because you don't know the 10th Amendment. It was a very subtle way of saying, I'm not voting for you either. And people ahead of me, and I was way in the back, and a couple guys turned around and look at me and like thumbs up, like, hey, that was really cool. That was cool. Okay, so we go to the Tea Party, third time. I mean, my gosh, this is a simple question. Do you know the 10th Amendment? So we had some assemblymen come up, candidates, and these candidates were at a local Tea Party. They're like, sir, can you tell me about the 9th and 10th Amendment? And he actually got elected, but do you know that? And he said something, well, you know, the states have some sovereignty that the federal government doesn't. That's good enough, sir. He basically got a D on the exam. I was like, look, job interview, okay? I mean, you don't know the Constitution? What the hell are you doing running for office? This is a job interview. And so, local manufacturing firm, economies law, I go apply for them. I had to take a math test. Probably got a 99%. But, you know, as an engineer, I better get a 99%. You don't know the Constitution? What the hell are you doing running for office? I mean, You know, you go for any company. Let's see. Let's look at a doctor, okay? Okay. Doctor, what do you know about medicine? Oh, healing the sick is a really good idea. Do you think that the State Board of Medicine is going to even put up with that shit? How about engineer? You know, oh, engineering is really good. It's about this water and roads. That's not the right answer.
It's like, hey, how do you afford something you know nothing about?
Yeah. So it's like, you know, do you know Bernoulli's equation? Yeah, I can spell that to you instantly. It's like all sorts of other equations, blah, 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 blah. If you don't know what the heck you're talking about, why are you even going to get the job in the private sector? And we're going to get people in office who can't answer that simple question. Do you know what the 10th Amendment is? This is key fundamental to our liberties.
Well, that's definitely what, well, speaking of the 10th Amendment, I'd like to take this time here for Nick, for you to tell us a little bit more about the 10th Amendment Center. Earlier in the show tonight, you were talking about some of the things from the website. So let's take that time right now to talk about that.
Oh, the new website, 10thAmendmentCenter.com? Let me tell you all about it. All right, so this is the 7th year anniversary of the 10th Amendment Center. So when you think about where nullification was 7 years ago and where it is today, 10th Amendment Center was absolutely vital in moving it forward. I mean, it's the largest, best resource for state sovereignty on the whole World Wide Web. And so the website is getting a bit of a facelift of sorts, and then other updates that are not as superficial as that. So let's see here what I can tell you. There's going to be new stuff on the website. There will be a new blog, a new page for the radio show. We do Tenther Radio every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, and then a brand new news page, better tracking for all those bills that you want to take a look at and see where they are. We have a new comment system, so, you know, you'll be able to make comments a lot easier, and then you can see what's trending, what other people are talking about. We've also got a really good Instagram page for 10th Amendment Center that's going to be growing, and so, you know, it's funny now, the internet is a lot like ancient Egypt. You know why? Because people just, they speak in pictures, and usually it's pictures of cats. So anyway, we have to go to Instagram and share all of our photographs of 10th Amendment Center stuff. And then here's the really exciting stuff. Another book.
And real quick, I hate to interrupt you, Nick, but I did tell Joe, who called earlier, he ended up having to drop the line that I'd let him on. And we've got plenty of time. We do have 45 minutes worth of live time. And one thing for the people new in the audience, looks like it dropped again. I was getting ready to get him on. So I guess go ahead. Maybe he's, I don't know. He's calling through Skype, so maybe there's something going with that. I'll just open his mic up. So you know, we'll go on with you. And I see him again. Great.
Let's get it.
And as I was going to say, we also have an extended period which isn't live, but it's still recorded and will be part of the archive. So at this time, I will be opening up your mic, Joe from Montana. Thank you very much for calling the show. How are you?
No problem. How are you doing?
Good, good. Yeah, well, looks like we dropped you a couple of times. Well, here we are, so that's great.
Okay. What I wanted to find out, I wanted your guys' opinions about. The Patriot Act was passed, I forget which year, but it was during the Bush administration. And a lot of people didn't really make too much of a fuss about it. In the news and really created a storm for only about a month or so, then it died away. My question is, now that we are finding out that the NSA, through Snowden, has been spying on us all this time, what would people expect when you pass the Patriot Act? Why would it take so long for the conservatives in particular to wake up and say, well, my God, of course they're going to be spying on us. I have predicted this years ago. 1984, people have read that book, Brave New World. People talk about how the government is corrupt, but yet they keep thinking as though it's just a movie. It's not a movie. So I wanted to find out your guys' opinions about that.
Well, I'll open up the floor to you, Nick, and then you, Kelly, go ahead, and I'll chime in.
Yeah, sure. The Patriot Act, you know, a lot of people were yelling about it, principled people anyway. You know, of course, now you hear some people who were all for the Patriot Act back then, now they're all for liberty instead of power. But, of course, they just lust for power, and once Jeb Bush is president, they'll be all for the Patriot Act all over again. But
well, let's don't say Jeb Bush president. Well, I don't want Jeb Bush to be president.
Well, let's hope it's not.
Is who I'd prefer.
You know, it'll probably be someone even worse. Who knows? But okay, so but we've got this Patriot Act, and what can we learn from it? And what can we do about it? Well, just look at what it's called. It's called the Patriot Act. That might remind you of the type of mentality that the government puts the people in to shove this stuff through. You know, now
of
course,
they always,
like
they always use the names, the different names that actually cloak the actual intention. Like the next law would probably be save the world, and it'll probably be an atomic powered drone that'll probably try to set the world off in a thermonuclear explosion. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. So I mean, that should remind us all the type of fervor that grows with the state, with the general government, and war. And that's why we have to stand first and foremost against these illegal wars, these unconstitutional wars. If we're constitutionalists at all, then, you know, listen to every single word Ron Paul ever said about foreign policy leading up to 9/11. He was right. After 9/11, he was right. So he was talking about surveillance long before the Patriot Act, and you know, was one of the lone voices out there on the signing of the Patriot Act. But and the Tenth Amendment Center was largely started because no one was doing anything about the Patriot Act at the local level. So that was the major crime of the day when the Tenth Amendment Center was founded. But that what we can do about the Patriot Act now is in similar ways to how we're dealing with the NDAA. And I know some proper legislation is coming forward from the Tenth Amendment Center soon on the Patriot Act. But in summary, what you can do is go to your city or county and say, hey, in this city or county, our local law enforcement is not going to comply. They are not going to cooperate with some fake warrant that an FBI agent wrote for himself, you know, and through some secret court.
Yeah, the NSL,
NLS. Whatever.
Yeah.
So it's got to be real and legitimate and recognized by a court within our state, kind of thing. So, as long as we're pulling out and saying we're not consenting to this anymore, we're not going to be your welcome.
Let me
mat.
Add a little bit to that, what you're saying.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is people making their presence known to congressmen, the local, well, not congressmen, but the local politicians, saying we're not going to put up with this anymore because the local enforcement, the local gendarme won't do it. I would suggest that if people are really serious about that type of direction and type of advice, that they actually go to the sheriff's office and let them know that they're serious and have the sheriff endorse them, because that's what some other people are doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to depend on where you are locally. You know, if you have a really good sheriff and a horrible mayor, then go to your sheriff. And if you have a really horrible sheriff and a better mayor or a better county board of supervisors or, you know, a better assemblyman or woman, you know, you just got to find where your potential ally might be. And I can't stress enough, especially on the Patriot Act, something that affects all of us, this is a perfect opportunity to reach across the aisle. It's such a cliche to say it that way, but we're organizing an event coming up and the whole theme is Big Brother. We're going to have a picnic in Pasadena, and we've got Tim Donnelly coming out, the Tea Party Republican I spoke about before, and Code Pink is going to be at the same event, and antiwar.com is going to be there too. So we don't, you know, if Big Brother is watching, then good, we'll give them something to watch. And it's going to be us doing the patriotic thing of saying no to these unconstitutional constitutional powers that, as I said before, all come down from national security. You know, it's always national security is what they preach. And, of course, those words are as empty and meaningless as someone calling you a racist for being against Obamacare. So these empty words that are there to shut down argument, to shut down debate and shut down dissent and make everyone line up and line up like cattle and turn us all into good Soviets, that's got to end. So we've got to start speaking strongly and passionately about defending the most vulnerable in society against those with all the power and the guns. And that, of course, is the federal government. So if we speak to it on those terms, I think we're going to find a lot of allies, and we, you know, the Patriot Act will be a relic of the past.
And real quick, gentlemen, I just got this from Facebook, and kind of serendipitous because you guys were mentioning about the people for ending up for president. I just heard that Alan West is considering opening the door to a 2016 presidential run.
Why doesn't he get a real job?
Folks, yes, and folks, I just to tell people who are on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page or a member of the new Bard's Logic Political Talk group there on Facebook. Of course, there are some links here on Blog Talk Radio how to come on and like the page and join the group. So check it out, or just go on to Facebook. If you are a member of Facebook, go to the search engine and just put in Bard's Logic Political Talk, and you will see the way to get to the page and also join the group. So go ahead. I just want to give that update as I received it. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Well, one thing I'd like to volunteer for is the next time you need hand models to put on blue gloves for the Holocaust image, let me know.
Yeah, I like that picture, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm taking a look at it.
Yeah,
okay.
The girl in the photo wasn't difficult to look at. I'll have to say that.
No.
I should have viewed that one more. I think that was provocative, but I thought, well, you know, I'll put it out some and just kind of test the result and you know, see what flavor people would come back with it, and I thought, well, maybe it might have been a little too provocative. But
No, it's not that provocative. Also, it does bring a point. No, it isn't. It is not provocative. It does raise some issues, because here you are grabbing the breasts of the chick, and that's a taboo still in America, except for the TSA. So when you have the blue gloves there and you're representing the TSA, people should, at the very least, it reminds them of what they have to go through in order to get through the airport. Now, remember how people have said before the TSA was created, you know, if anything like this happened in America, I'd fight to the death for anybody who would, to defend my family, anybody who would attack my my castle, my house, my home, my lawn. And what happens? People are going through the airport being molested every day. So people do have to do more than just wake up. They have to have a reaction.
Definitely,
and
you're right. I should have put that out on more of the Facebook groups and things of that nature. But I was like, we'll see. But for folks who have not seen it, or if they're coming to the show through one of the other photos that I put out there for the show tonight, go ahead and go to the Bard's Logic Little Talk page there on Facebook. It's new; it's only a couple weeks old, and you can actually see the photo that he talked about on there. And feel free to share it. And I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Go ahead, guys.
Yeah, I heard someone mention Alan West running for president, and I knew that it could possibly be worse than Jeb Bush. I knew something might be worse.
Oh,
you
see, but, Alan West could be.
That's a horrifying thought. But
I would think just about anybody, even Rand Paul, because I happen to lie. I'm a libertarian anarchist, more on the anarchist side, and Rand Paul, hopefully. What he's doing is ingratiating himself in with the Rhino, so that in 2016, if he's still the front runner for the presidential run, that he turns the tables on the Republicans. Because that's my only hope in him. Because he wants to get 13 million immigrants to have a pathway to citizenship. And that, to me, is, okay, almost the final nail in the coffin of America.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's kind of funny, because usually the libertarian anarchist position doesn't really mind, like, what side of the border a person's on or whatever. So
their free market philosophy. But let everybody come across the border.
Kelly here. I'm a registered libertarian here, and some of these guys in the Libertarian Party that think we should have open borders. I'm sorry. I just talk to them in their face and say, "You guys are idiots."
Thank you.
Okay,
you got to tell them that.
I do, man. I'm like, are you serious? I mean, either quit taking the drugs or give me some.
I happen to believe a lot can be solved by free market economics, but this is not an economics issue directly. It is international burglary. It is allowing people to just come across the borders and sit in your country. You do not want people knocking on your door, making themselves squatters inside your apartment and staying there. You don't want them coming across the border and staying there. I'm sorry. Libertarians, we have our own different factions. As a matter of fact, the worst thing to be when you're trying to get together to try to unify and try to get the country to become saved by us is to be a libertarian, because everybody thinks that they're the sole candle in the wind, that they can save America all by themselves. When I tried in 2007 to unify libertarians for Ron Paul, my biggest obstruction were my fellow libertarians. Everybody thought that they were, individual Batman.
Well, I got to interject again. Ron Paul won the 1988. Ron Paul won the Libertarian presidential nomination. Okay, it's a little different. We're trying to get back to our roots, and libertarians absolutely dearly adore they adore the Constitution. There's not a question about that. Tim Donnelly's bill, okay, I mentioned the representative from his office earlier. He came to the Libertarian Party, and the Libertarian Party of California, California supposedly from the left coast, Rich Limbaugh there. All right, we passed a unanimous resolution supporting Tim Donnelly's bill. We did. Unanimous. It was any dissenting votes. You could hear crickets. I mean, it was like
right. No.
Okay.
Right.
So,
wow.
So what happened?
What
thing here?
Sound?
Yeah.
Don't make that
hold
sound.
On, gentlemen. Let's not talk over each other. Go ahead, Kelly, and then Jeff.
All right. So
finish up, and then Joe.
All right. So anyway. All right. So anyway, the Republican Party in California is a stinking mess. Okay? It is a mess. And so people are starting to look at libertarians here in California. You know, we are, surprisingly or not, we are a highly ag state. Okay? Highly, some of our, you go to the produce aisle, one-third of the food is coming from where? California. 50 states, one-third. What are we doing? Well, we're doing the agrarian states happen to be a lot more conservative constitutional-minded. So we've got something here, and the Republican Party of California is just a mess. The Republicans oppose, the conversation was the legislative aid there, the Republicans of California oppose Donnelly. They're like, oh, you're kind of a freak. I don't know if you're part of our party. I don't know what you're doing. I mean, look, liberty is, this is another little segment I'm going to, liberty is in our heart, in our being. It was when we were created. I know some liberals, okay, and I'm friends with liberals. And my buddy Dave, go out drinking beer, have a good time. We get Victoria Collier, she would be an interesting person to get on our show. She's a liberal, but she loves the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. There's a little distinction, though, between the grassroots liberals and the grassroots libertarians. The grassroots liberals think that we should, if you made an awful lot of money from the country that made you wealthy, you should give back. Like, no, sorry, to the government, no. But millionaires happen to do what? Spend a lot of money, create a lot of jobs. What's the problem here? Private sector, I'd rather go with that than government. But they do. These liberals, this liberal buddy of mine, he's just up in Oregon, just over the border. He was raised Eastern Washington, rural area. He's a liberal gun owner. He loves the Second Amendment, but he's liberal. But we're coming together. We really are, and I don't chide my liberal friends. It's ironic how much we have in common, and Tim Donnelly proved this. We just got to unify so that the powers that be and their schmucks that they get to the top, we we've got to get these schmucks out of power so we can be free.
Well, it's easy. The only thing is, people are too stupid. The one recommendation that I had given...
You know, can I chime in real quick on the immigration thing real quick?
Joe give his, his response.
Yeah, this
will
take about 45 seconds anyway. Here's the perfect remedy. But again, it shows how stupid Americans are. All we had to do back in 2012, especially in 2012, now I don't think we're going to have much of a choice in 2016. I think Diebold will probably take over. If you watch the TV show Scandal, it'll show how that's done. Just by rigged elections. But back in 2012, last year, all we had to do was vote for an independent. Didn't matter if you liked Ron Paul, if you liked the Green Party, if you liked the Constitution Party, any independent, because they were not career politicians. So even if we had a clean sweep and we took out the Democrats and Republicans and we put in inexperienced, brand-new politicians who didn't know their ass from their elbow, they still would have done better than career politicians. They would not have had an agenda to try to stay in office, hopefully until the lobbyists got to them. But that perfect remedy, just vote for an independent. You wouldn't even have to know who he or she was. The fact that he or she was an independent meant that they were anti-career politician. They would have done better. But people didn't do that. People would have rather have voted for nobody than vote for somebody who would have done something. But go ahead now.
Go ahead, Nick.
No, I'm finished.
Okay. Yeah, well, on immigration, I am sort of an open borders guy myself, and maybe that's been mischaracterized or people get the whole idea wrong, but I want to connect it to the nullification debate too, in the sense that when I was saying before that the left does nullification better than anyone, those sanctuary cities are forms of nullification. So a lot of them who support sanctuary cities but then say that they're against nullification, it's kind of funny. I don't know why. The liberals, for the most part now, I think they are learning what nullification is, and then they understand that they're for it. But a lot of them they think it's a scary word. But I just wanted to point out that they use it for sanctuary cities. But, a few facts on immigration. Between 1860 and 1920, we had a whole lot of immigration come in, and it was about 14% of the population of Americans were foreign-born at that point. And then into the next century, the 20th century, it was about 10-plus percent, 10 to 11%. And right now, today, it's not that much different. It's about 13%. And, it's more or less self-regulating, the undocumented immigrants. Like, between 2005 and 2010, net immigration came down to zero. And the reason why is just because there's no demand for immigrant work. So it's very much an economic answer to the immigration question. I think as far as policy goes, the moment you start talking about amnesty and all, the scariest part about that isn't so much amnesty. It's what amnesty ultimately entails and entitles people and wraps them into the welfare state and grows the government, and we don't want that. So... In the sense that immigrants, if illegal immigrants are rewarded and they tend to side with a larger government and a larger state, as most Americans do, by the way, then we have problems because we don't want to grow the government. But, to scapegoat the immigrant, I just don't think is the answer. You know, who had a really interesting opinion on the Second Amendment was Malcolm X. And Malcolm X was talking about the Second Amendment once to a crowd of people, and he said that when a criminal is on my back, I don't want the criminal to dictate to me the means of how to get him off my back. I'm going to use whatever means I can to get the criminal off my back. And the criminal is not a cracker in Georgia. The criminal is the U.S. government. It's the government. So for me, I don't really blame the cracker in Georgia. I don't blame the Mexican in Mexico. I'm blaming the welfare state, the warfare state, the war on drugs, all of these policies that end up driving people to make certain economic choices that they otherwise wouldn't be forced to make. And like I said, immigration, was hardly a problem at all from 2005 to 2010. Like, it really upsurged when we had some, you know, quote, good economic years, unquote. But you know, it's largely an economic question, and right now I think it's a lot of political theater up there. I don't know what they're going to pass, if anything, so I don't tend to talk about it too much. But on nullification, that's something that the left owns again, that they love their sanctuary cities, but they deny the grander principle of nullification when they hear it spelled out in the N-word that way. So
I gotta stick up for the left, okay? I know.
Oh yeah, I
mean,
do. I am sticking up for the left. I am sticking up for him. And you know, like I said, Malcolm X was really good on the Second Amendment. You know who was horrible on it was Ronald Reagan when he introduced the first laws banning open carry in California.
Brady
against
Bill,
against the Black Panthers. So. Yeah, I mean, it's not a left or right issue. It's not that simple. I mean, there are plenty on the left who are great on guns because it's an issue of equality. Why should one class of citizenry be allowed to own guns and another class not be allowed to own them? But nowadays, a lot of the, you know, Democrats and people who call themselves the left nowadays, they only want the government to own guns, not you and me. So it's, you know, it's weird.
Well, I'm going to stick up for the left here, okay? I'm not talking about the upper echelon, like Gary Reed.
But before you, Kelly, before you do, I want to bring in something Tessa put in the chat, and thank you very much, Tessa and Cindy, for contributing. And I'd like to get the story, when you can, on your experience with the TSA that you had today. And unfortunately, she's in a spot where she cannot call in. But I do have one here from Tessa. Thank you much. And her comment is, liberals love the federal, in all caps for federal, government, and consider this as huge, benign, and consider this huge benign thing that is supposed to even things out and make everything fair, just, and right. And thank you very much, Tessa. And I hope I read that right for you. Go ahead, Jess. I just want to bring that in because one thing I'd like to do is for those who may not be as comfortable calling in, and being, you know, heard over the radio, I do like to bring in some people to make comments in the chat. So go ahead.
All right. I want to stick up for the left a little bit, okay? And now I'm talking about my grassroots friends, okay? My grassroots friends of the left who, you know, we shared a beer, we had a discussion, you know, we had lunch together. They, of course, they got their little quirks and stuff. Higher echelons, Harry Reid, you know, Nancy Pelosi, that other one, Feinstein, whatever. By the way, do you know what Dianne Feinstein's problem is? You know, Feinstein, she's trying to grab her guns. Yeah. Well, what happened was she keeps having recurring nightmares about her sister from Kansas. Kansas, yes. So what happened was Dianne Feinstein has never been the same since that house fell on her sister.
Oh, man.
Okay, so anyway, this is the higher echelons, okay? And the higher echelons of the liberals are influencing and guiding the grassroots, but the grassroots of the liberals are saying, you know, let's get with Tim Donnelly. Let's nullify the NDAA. You know what? I'm sticking up for the left in the sense of over on the right, the higher echelons of the Republicans passed the NDAA, the Patriot Act, and the grassroots are saying, what are you guys thinking? What are you thinking? You know, Wally Erger, he finally resigned, and we've got Doug LaMalfa, a great guy, you know, he's a freshman, loves the Constitution, all that stuff. But Doug, I can hear it in his tone. I call it, you know, oh gosh, Wally Erger was like, oh yeah, Tea Party, I really like the Tea Party. No, you were an upper echelon schmuck. You voted for the Patriot Act. You voted for the bank bailout. You voted for all this crap. Okay? So what's happening here? Way at the top, you got Republicans, supposedly conservative, you got liberals, supposedly liberal, that you're working for somebody else that I don't understand, and you're not listening to the people in the grassroots. Down here at the grassroots, we got the left, we got the right, we're coming together, we understand there's something wrong, but there's these deceivers at the top of both parties that are leading us in the wrong direction. It's, you know, as sick of the left, I'm also chiding the right. We have got to do our research. We've got to understand. Yeah, we've got to understand who's leading us. Who's leading us are these people that don't have our best interest in mind. The grassroots on both sides are saying, we got to get this straightened out, guys. You're not listening to us, your boss. What's wrong?
Okay, I got a question for you. When you're talking about both parties leading us in the wrong direction, do you think they're doing it because they're led astray? Do you think they're doing it on purpose? Do you think they're doing it because they're stupid?
Well, some would say they stepped on stupid, but really, I have actually finally come to a conclusion about government. Government is very efficient. It does exactly what the politicians have intended, which is to get them reelected. Very efficient.
Okay, but that doesn't answer my question, though.
Repeat your question again.
Do you think they're doing it because they're being led astray? They're stupid or they're corrupt?
They have become addicted to the wine of maddening power, and somebody is pulling their strings. I don't understand why these people, left, right, go into these positions of power trying to get elected on the plea of the common man, and then they get up there and they forget what they went there for.
Yeah, a lot of them do, because, yeah, they're influenced by the corridors of power. But again, what do you think? Do you think they are leading us astray, as you're saying, because they're doing it simply because they're immoral, or they're stupid, or that they're getting bad advice?
Maybe all of the above.
The reason why I ask is because they've been so stupid so long, they can't be stupid. When you're committing 1,000 mistakes, you have to know sometime after being in Congress for 20 years that the mistakes are harming the American people. You can't be so stupid to just bypass that. You are corrupt. The people in Congress, regardless of whether they're brand new, the freshman rhinos, the freshman Tea Party assholes, or whether they've been there as long as Lindsey Graham, they are there because, well, some of them will say they're there to try to help out the people. But once they're there, you're right, they turn. They're Your Honor, yes, sir, no matter what they do, they feel very important, and they don't want to give up their seat. However, having been there for such a long time, which is one, as a senator, being there a full term, first term, that's 6 years, you know how politics is done. If you're voting on certain bills, and those bills turn out to be harmful not only to your constituents, but the other people and on the other coast, you're responsible for that. Once you've done it once, twice, three times, four times, you're responsible for your decisions. These people are not so stupid that they can be, claim, well, I didn't know what I was doing, okay? They are corrupt. I've been saying for years that what I would like is for them to be investigated by the FBI to then go to trial on charges of treason, to be convicted of treason, and then killed, executed for being traitors.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Wow.
Who put the FBI people in place? Who appoints the directors? Oh, that's right, the same people they're supposed to investigate. That doesn't work.
No, it doesn't, because they're funded by Congress. So we have to have somebody else do it. That means us. We have to become more awakened. The FBI should do it, but they're not. Some people...
They're not.
Some people have been convicted. If people actually investigate Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, there have been enough congressmen who have been convicted of felonies to give people pause and to allow them to realize that Congress is a den of inequity. And these are the people who have been convicted. I happen to believe
right.
in the cockroach theory. If you have one person who's been convicted, there's about 10 more who haven't but have done the same crime.
Hey, do you know in our nation's history... Over 104 congressmen have been indicted. That's pretty much, you know, 2 year session, 2 year term. Pretty much one for every term. But who indicted them? What body indicted them?
either the Attorney General or the FBI or the local, or somebody, local police, or somebody blew the whistle on them. The thing is,
No, I'm stopping you right there. The grand juries have indicted a number of congressmen and senators. That is the fourth branch of government. That's why I wrote this book. It's just something we can actually do. It's we the people looking on, over our government officials. We have lost that because why? Oh, that's right, public education, Jimmy Carter. Thank you very much. We have lost the knowledge of the grand jury, and of course, you know, again, I want to go on the Republicans. I used to be one. I want to come home, but they've got to get their swear word straightened out. Richard Nixon, okay? Oh, he was wonderful.
The grand juries indict everybody over a major crime. First, they have to be investigated, and then the prosecutor, which is the attorney general, they have to go on their desk, and then they have to approve it. So we have to have non-corrupt attorney generals, and we have to have law enforcement that will be honest in itself.
Well, it does take a team. However, Neo, the Matrix has you. The Matrix has you. John Jay, first Chief Justice of the United States, giving his charge to the Richmond Grand Jury. It is your job to investigate the offenses against the laws of the United States. Where was the Justice Department? Didn't exist until 1870. Where was the FBI? Didn't exist until the late 1930s. The Matrix has you because few people understand this. That's how we keep government accountable. That's just one element. The other, there's so many problems with our present government. It's unbelievable. And by the way, our Congress and our Senate has refused to listen to Article 5 petitions from how many states? Oh, pretty much all of them. How many times? Oh, over 300 times have the states said, we need to have a constitutional convention. In the 60s, Bell's budget amendment. Are they listening? No.
Then if not the FBI, then who?
I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm.
John Jay has charged the grand jury of 1793. It's your job to investigate. Well, let's get a federal prosecutor. We don't have them. Well, let's get the Justice Department. It didn't exist. And that's one of the reasons we have this big mess, is because the government has grown to the point where nobody knows. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. We have this mess.
And again, the question still asks, and if not the FBI, then who? And you can't say the grand jury, because the grand jury can't be convened just because I want it.
Well, the FBI is, you know, they're the criminals. They're not the
ones
keeping us safe or anything. I mean, we should abolish the FBI.
The only thing is maybe a non-corrupt attorney general, but that would be
Hold on, Joe. Hold on, Joe. I just want to give Nick some time to go ahead and chime in. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, unfortunately, before we abolish the FBI, I have to abolish the phone call. I have to go. I wish I could stay on longer, but it's been a real pleasure. I have to go. I just realized I looked at the clock and the time goes by so fast.
Indeed, yes, it does, and time does go fast, and it can be late. But real quick, since you do have to go, if there's any last parting things about the website or about the Tenth Amendment Center that you'd like to leave with the audience, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, you know, just simply going to tenthamendmentcenter.com and learning a little bit about the organization. If you have questions, most of the answers are there. We're very much in touch with grassroots people. A great way to get involved is to volunteer at volunteer.tenthamendmentcenter.com. And also, you know, if I may for a quick second, since we're talking about the FBI and how much we love it and whatever, my other employer is antiwar.com, and they're suing the FBI right now. FBI with its secret surveillance over antiwar.com, and it's funny, why would the Nobel Peace Prize winning president want to shut down antiwar.com? I don't know. but that's something for another day maybe. But what a great show, and such a pleasure coming on. I'm really glad we got introduced to each other. So I will just have to keep in touch with y'all.
Yeah, definitely. We'll keep in touch, and we definitely like to have some more shows, and we'll talk more about antiwar.com.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. Good night.
Good night. Take care. We look forward to speaking with you again. And folks, that was Nick from the 10th Amendment Center. And, of course, visit the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And also, we mentioned volunteer at the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. So check it out. If you're going straight to the website there or do a Google search for it. And also, you'll be able to find a link to the website via the Bard's Logic Political Talk page here on Facebook. So just if you are a Facebook member, just go there, put it in the search engine, or you can also find the link from here on Blog Talk Radio for the description of tonight's show. And, of course, those listening on the archives, share the link and share the MP3 with folks. They can listen to it themselves. So, Kelly, I'll go ahead and bring the floor to you while I update the Facebook page there. And also there's a Bard's Logic Political Talk group, so if also folks there on Facebook or Instagram, check that out and send me a request to join. At this time, Kelly, I'll bring it up to you, and I'm going to do a few updates real quick. Go ahead.
Well, the Matrix has been very pervasive ever since Jimmy Carter decided to we're going to fund local schools. What? My grandpa went to a townhouse school. You know, the classic story of, you know, we walked to school uphill against the wind both ways, you know. But we had local control, and the states were like, we have come to a federal government that says, you will implement this program. You, Common Core is freaky, scary, what's going on with that. You know, laptops for all the students. So all the teachers got a lot less work, and the parents don't have to look in grade homework. And by the way, you know, Common Core through the federal government computer system kind of implement a little bit of political ideology left and right, and the parents and teachers don't know about it because they're exhausted. So anyway, our federal government's out of control. I love the 10th Amendment, what they've been doing. 7 years, they've come here. I am absolutely inspired. We may yet preserve our nation. I'm just inspired. I don't know what to say after this whole conversation we've been having.
Well, since nobody's jumping in, I would just like the host to try to get in touch with the model so she can get in touch with me. Bard?
Yes, I'm here.
Did you hear me?
Unfortunately, no, I did not. I was
okay.
Actually chatting with someone on Facebook
right.
And also doing some multitasking. So if you could repeat that, I really appreciate it.
All right. I just said that if you get the model to get in touch with me.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, no doubt. If I can get a hold of the model, I will let you know.
All right.
After I do. No.
Of course.
Great. Yeah, I'm getting the website there to the 10thAmendmentCenter.com and putting it on the Facebook page there for folks to check out.
Yeah. So,
okay. You go ahead, Joe, and continue on Kelly while I do this. And I'm also multitasking here, so I'm chatting with someone else here on Facebook who may be able to call in. He has some things he's been working on as well, and I'd like to chat about. And we do have only about 7 minutes left of the live time, so folks want to call in to listen to the extended period, because unfortunately, once the extended period starts, I can no longer take live calls. And the call-in number is 347-945-7428. Again, that's 347-945-7428. If you'd like to call in just to listen, or if you'd like to chime in, please do so within the next 7 minutes, and we'll get you in here to listen to the extended version. So I'll leave the floor back to you, Joe, and you too, Kelly. Go ahead.
Well, I'm still kind of like dwelling upon what, you know, the 10th Amendment Center had to offer, and they haven't. Obviously, you know, I just look at action, okay? What have you done? What victories do you have? And obviously he's got quite the resume here. You know, same with the grand jury, I put my book. What have you done? How has it happened? What are we doing? What can we do? I, you know, raise an Iowa farm and things get out. You don't, like, oh, gee, call your neighbor. Oh, wow, they're in the garden. Oh, gee, neighbor while we were discussing on the phone what we're doing. Oh, gee, now they're in the white flower beds. Let's call the radio talk show. No, we get stuff done. And the Tenth Amendment Center has obviously done and accomplished an awful lot in 7 years. Our government is, I think, an aircraft carrier. Aircraft carriers take like 7 miles to turn around. And so this guy, I hope he comes on again, you know, because we need action. And what are our hands-on things? What can we do to make a difference? How can we improve our system? What can we do? That's my biggest question. What can we? I'm done with conspiracy theory books. What can we do? And this guy, he's pretty much nailing it.
So what do you think we can do, realistically?
Pretty much what this guy did. He's discovered, you know, a piece of gold that has been forgotten. He's motivated, connected people, caused action. States are issuing nullification laws. That's great. You know, of course, jury nullification, that's another one. We don't have time for that, but...
Well, jury nullification would really be huge if people actually understood it, but there are too many immigrants in the country who don't understand it, and then a lot of natural-born Americans who won't go along with it because they'll take the instructions of the judge to just judge the evidence as opposed to using their brain to judge the law. So I'm all for jury nullification, but...
Well, I am too, and I hate to go through... I served jury duty about a month ago where they basically... I didn't get on because we had like 70 people and everybody, you know, what I dread is, you know, I'm actually a jury member and I start schooling the judge. You might want to look at U.S. versus Doherty. Multiple instances in American history exist where the jury has disregarded the instructions of the judge. You know, Sutherland versus Stewart, Ring versus Arizona, Duncan versus Louisiana. I know about this. The problem is, judges, oh, you know what? You're dismissed. You're dismissed, Mr. Mordecai. Oh, wait a minute. New Hampshire. This is a fundamental, you know, FIJA, Fully Informed Jury Association, FIJA.org.
Mm-hmm.
Their people got laws passed in New Hampshire, whereas the defense may bring up jury nullification. Do you know how many laws are going to be nullified by the juries because of this? When we do a state-by-state comparison in a few years, we're going to see, oh, gee, charges versus, you know, what do you have? Like, right now we have, I don't know, I would say 90% conviction on the charges that are presented.
Well, federal crime? Yeah, it's 95% in criminal cases, yeah.
Well, I know. Yeah, so, I mean, state-by-state with their juries, we're seeing 90% plus. But in New Hampshire, we're going to drop down to, like, what, 60%? It'll just take some time. It'll just take some time where New Hampshire proves out this great principle of jury nullification, which is, by the way, one of the great vertebrae in the backbone of liberty, as is the grand jury, another vertebrae. We just happen to be, our country needs to see a chiropractor. This is how bad this is.
Yeah,
and the American people need...
Yeah.
Yeah. And thanks to Jimmy Carter and the BS crap, and I don't know how this happened, but people coming through the public schools do not know their power. They do not know, and so we have this mess that we have, and I'm just beginning to wonder if we are even any more the greatest country on the planet.
No, we're not. Our test scores are way down. Our economy sucks. Our Congress is openly corrupt, and people say, go ahead, anyway. So, no, we're not.
You know, I'm having a hard time. My heart's not letting my mind accept the fact that we aren't the greatest country in America, in the world anymore. I'm still struggling with it, but I want to believe, but I'm struggling with this. Can I? Because, you know, the first step in solving any problem is acknowledging there is a problem.
That's
you're
right.
Like psychologists. Yeah, psychologists will tell you, once you acknowledge the problem from your past, you know, the therapist, whatever, once you acknowledge the problem, you're 51% there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still struggling with America's not the greatest country anymore.
Well, hope you get over it because you've gotten over the first hump, which was not accepting the fact that our government, could be against the American people. That by itself had to be painful because it took a while. Well, and I was even predisposed towards accepting the fact that the government was full of corrupt people. But it still took me a little while. I had to watch about a couple of Alex Jones's documentaries three times in order for it to really hit me. Because I was fighting, and I didn't want to believe that this particular government or any of our past, present, or future United States federal government or any of our other governments, local, municipal governments, are corrupt. But once I started doing my research to confirm it, other than just the documentaries, then I started realizing it, then I started accepting it. But it's painful. So if you can look this particular truth in the eye, you'll get over that. If we get back, if we can get back Congress, which is limited and non-corrupt, we won't ever have a completely non-corrupt Congress. But we can limit the power by limiting the agency, the number of agencies, the powers that we give Congress. Then, if we eliminate the stupid rules and regulations that hurt the economy and that hurt small businesses and hurt corporations, then we can restore the 6 million jobs that we've sent overseas, and then we can get back our economy again. So get back our international standing, and other people besides us will be proud of America, and we will have earned it.
I like that phrase, we will have earned it, because the American people will get into action, make it happen. We will have earned that status again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, was that a partial confession? Was that a partial confession? We have problems?
There you go. So in any case, well, you guys only have a few minutes left, so I'm going
to... Well, actually, Joe, I wanted to bring up two things. Is
mm-hmm.
We are in... Lifetime is now over. We are in the recorded... I hate saying
The archive.
The recorded extended period. In which, while it's not heard live, it is going to be part of the archive. And I want to say, sorry, Brian, for not being able to, as someone from Facebook, able to get you in. Of course, we have show every Wednesday evening at 10
mm-hmm.
p.m. Eastern Time. So we'd like to have you in next week. So, and I'll send you a few messages on Facebook with some more details. And also, we've got here in the chat someone asking Kelly, well, Kelly, who's better than the USA? I don't see any country any better. You'd like to address that?
Well, we still may be number one in the world in terms of impressions, in terms of people who take a look at us and say, United States, superpower. But if you want to compare economies, if you want to compare test scores, if you want to compare the future, the United States is becoming quickly a third world country. Are the other countries that much better? In certain areas, yeah. In other areas, no. But we're not the number one as we used to be. We used to be number one in everything. Not only were we a superpower, but we had enough food to feed the entire world. We had the greatest scientists. We still have the greatest universities. But at the same time, our liberties have been practically eliminated. And the homogeneity of our nation is gone. That's why I'm against, I would have been against immigration anyway. I didn't address the other person's argument about immigration, but this goes to that person's question in the chat room. He was talking about immigration and how we allowed immigrants to come in here and they were the backbone of the country in some way. Prior to 1965, that was the case because mainly European stock came over here, so there was homogeneity. The past settlers meshed and merged with the present settlers. In other words, those prior to 1965, they were of the same nationality. They were of the same stock. They assimilated together. Now, since 1965, when Ted Kennedy introduced a bill to allow people from other countries to come in with greater numbers, these particular people do not assimilate. When you do not assimilate, you
mm-hmm.
are ruining the country through implosion.
Well, we're no longer a melting pot. We're more like a salad bowl.
Yeah, we're not the melting pot. We're not meshing together. Okay,
right.
We have people who want La Raza, who want to take back Arizona, New Mexico, and California and make it part of
mm-hmm.
Mexico again. That's not meshing and merging.
Right, and also, I mean, if you look through history, and Pat Buchanan really said this very well in his book, The Death of the West. You know, any nation, and in some instances some people even would say empire, that falls to multiculturalism fails, crumbles, you know, falls apart because you lose your national identity. And once a country falls to multiculturalism and loses its national, national identity, then it falters and it fails.
Exactly.
And I'm concerned that that's actually is what's happening to
exactly
America. We're not going to see each other as Americans anymore.
We don't.
See ourselves in subcultures.
No, we don't. We are a bunch of subcultures, and that's the problem. And multiculturalism is not a bad name in and of itself. However, when you're taking a look at diverse cultures, which are remaining diverse, and their children are practically remaining diverse, and they're not assimilating as well as they should have, plus we're having this competition between 13 million illegal immigrants who are documented, at least, who have been 13 million illegal immigrants. There are probably, who knows, 20 million, 25 million. And those aren't documented. Plus, they get away with murder, literally. They they can vote without becoming a citizen. Okay? This is what I mean when it's too stupid to be stupid. It has to be a corrupt agenda.
Orchestrated.
Just because the wall came down in Berlin and the end of Russia and Reagan got credit for, you know, putting up the, what was it, SDI, I think it was, and the race for the stratosphere is what conquered Russia because they were then overspending in order to keep up with us. That's part of it. The thing is, though, is that just because the wall came down and people don't hear communism anymore doesn't mean that those generals and hardcore communists in Russia said, well, the wall is down, let's have some vodka and celebrate the victory of America. No, they just went underground.
No, they're still pushing it.
Yeah, they're still out there, okay? And if it's not the communists, then it's either the globalists or it could be the Zionists. Anybody can pick their poison, but one thing is sure. Ever since the beginning of time, all man has really wanted to do was conquer the world. Just because we're not being conquered in the old way like Hitler and Stalin wanted to do it. We're being conquered economically.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, that was written by an inside banker, 1899. The book, The Coming Battle, describes all sorts of forms of slavery. You know, there was a feudal system. England, you didn't give me the exit.
In my opinion.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of problems. He said the next wave of slavery will be dead slavery. But, you know, if someone were to ask me what country is more free, that would be Antarctica, because there is no government.
We're going to hear something from Tessa, her analogy here, and when he's talking about, what's going on with America. It says, true, but we're destroying the good parts. Now we're becoming fat-free cheesecake. We look like real cheesecake, but all the good stuff has been substituted and swapped out for facsimiles.
Yeah.
I like the cheesecake analogy. Because I like cheesecake. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really like Joe. I like that he called in. You know, I like this. Oh, he's kind of the guy that, you know, he can come to my house, we have dinner, and he'll, like, speak freely and tell me what I need to hear, but he's not, like, he's accepting while he's speaking. Very few people have this ability. And I like this guy. I really do. I hope he calls in more and gives us
input. Thanks. I'm not like the normal libertarian. Well, you don't know. I mean, I've been in my battles too, but I think what you're hearing is a resignation on my part that America is circling the drain. And I think in order for us to save ourselves, we should, as a people, but we're not going to rise up. I am so glad that Snowden appeared, because that took so much guts. Some people may not think of him as a hero, but I happen to think of him as a hero. I happen to think that he utilized his conscience, he exposed the NSA, he woke up people. But how long we're going to stay awake as a result of our moral indignation that, our emails are being read. Well, they were read since the Patriot Act, folks. You know, our phone calls have been recorded ever since the Patriot Act. But since it didn't really hurt the conservatives at that time, since they were all Bushites, now the conservatives are being hurt by Obama. Now they're waking up, and now the other people are waking up. But it has to come.
Well, Joe, I'm so looking forward to seeing you in the gulag or these detention centers.
You're not seeing me in the gulag. Nobody knows who I am.
Well, I'm joking with you, but you know, hey, what? I tell you what, you bring a case of beer, I'll bring a couple of bottle of wine, and we'll just have a good time talking.
Earlier,
you know,
Kelly, I thought you were a wine connoisseur.
Well, you know, you're in California, you can't help but being a wine connoisseur. Anyway, Joe has just brought out some really interesting points, and what we have here is we have a country that is a mess. We got top politicians that aren't listening to the people. We got some kind of agenda that he's brilliant point here. If it's so stupid, it's got to be stupid, you know.
No, it's so stupid, it can't be stupid.
Yeah, so stupid, it can't be stupid. That's an excellent point. There's got to be an agenda, a hidden agenda, something's going on. And so we've got to overcome this somehow, some way. I'm looking for answers. One of them is representation. We do not have proper representation. We got to get Mike Warnken on your show, Robert, because he has hit a serious nerve. We've got to get him on your show and he explains this on his website. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, oh my gosh. You know, Congress should be, it's John Adams. The courts and the executive should be few in number, but the Congress should be large in number, one of the founding fathers. And so if we had, what is the limit? One for 33,000. Oh, gosh, there's only 33,000 people I can actually call my U.S. congressman. But now we're at the millions. Forget it. They won't even listen to me. They won't give me the time of day. They're so damn busy. They don't even care. New Hampshire, okay? New Hampshire, nullification. Like, yeah, New Hampshire's got it. Oh, that's right. They have one state legislator representative for 2,400 people. Mm-hmm. 2,400. Does that make you feel that you can actually approach your state legislature? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so they've got it figured out. Low representation. He's done this study analysis. When by the way, the turnover rate, when you have a low ratio, 1 to 2,400, turnover rate's pretty high. When you have 1 to like a million or 1 to 3 million, forget it. The incumbency rate is insane. The corruption, the pollution, the being drunk on the wine, abandoning the power. Mm. It's like, whoa, we've got to get him on the show. And this is
yeah,
like
definitely.
A night.
Yeah,
so anyway, New Hampshire keeps getting figured out. I'm thinking, what? East Coast? Liberal? No, they can figure it out. They really do. Why? Why is New Hampshire, East Coast? Oh, that's right, representation. They're easily accessible. You know, Dianne Feinstein, we got 35 million here in California. We have 2 senators, well, that divide by 2. What's that? Oh, that's right. You know, 17.5 million, she ain't gonna listen to me. Forget it.
Well, one of the things that the folks need to do is stay, you know, is become awakened and stay awake longer than, you know, during an election cycle. I mean, you do get a lot of energy, you get a lot of buzz, get a lot of activity, you know, around the election cycle. But once that's over, then it seems like things die down. I mean, one of the lowest attention spans in the political attention span here, you know, the political memory is not very long right now.
No, it's like that
I think
of a lot of a nag, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so one of the things, Joe, we talked about libertarian and the parties. What's your thoughts on the past 2012 election?
Well, it just proved to me how stupid we were. Okay, you're talking about the buzz around the election time. Again, if people really wanted the Democrats and Republicans out, they could have voted for any independent. But the problem is that people believe, yes, now 6%, that's the approval rating of Congress. But the fly in the ointment is that people, let's say, from New Mexico, they believe that the people in California or Utah or Idaho, they're corrupt. But their senator, their congressman, they're good guys. See, they get the newsletters,
mm-hmm.
they're particular guys, and they read about how their pseudo accomplishments have affected their particular lives in ways they don't even know, and they vote in the same clown who they don't even know his voting record about. So that's the problem with America. Oh, we hate politicians. We know they're crooked, but my guy's terrific. Well, no, your guy sucks, but you got to vote them all out. So we have not awakened to that extent. We can say, well, you know what? Yeah, something's wrong with America. All you had to do was vote for the third party. Anybody. That's it. But people didn't do that.
We interviewed the archives. If you go back to the archives of the show here, Joe, you'll see that we interviewed a lot of folks from different parties during the election. I mean, and some of those were parties that may not have even be heard before, like the Republic Forum, which really isn't considered a party. But now we did have a lot of folks from the Constitution Party. We've interviewed a lot of folks from there, especially Virgil Goode of the Constitution Party, who of course ran for president in 2012. Which I liked a lot of what he had to say, and a lot of things he pushed for. But as you said, a lot of folks, a lot of conservatives decided instead of voting for someone like a Virgil Goode, decided not to vote at all.
Yeah, I know. That's their antidote. Well, you know what? I hate voting. Well, I haven't voted in years either for anybody. But the thing is that if you don't vote for anyone, then by default, the incumbent wins. So that's not exactly the answer either.
Well, I personally blame the Republicans for having another 4 years of Obama, really. The way they nominated, Romney. I mean, Romney was the absolute worst candidate they could have possibly, pushed to run against or supported to run against Obama. I mean, the absolute worst. There's no way that Romney could have beaten.
And the
so-called conservative media was touting that Romney was the only person who could beat Obama when they knew that the exact opposite was true.
Was
it you who mentioned Rush Limbaugh earlier?
Yeah, I mentioned
this
it.
Evening,
yeah.
Way earlier this evening. I've been wanting to play this clip since then. It's only a 27-second clip. But this was an absolute untruth by Rush Limbaugh said on the day of the Florida primary. And here it is. Okay.
By the way, folks, just I have to remind you again that Gingrich debated John Kerry on global warming one point, and they agreed on practically every point. Nobody is innocent. Everybody is guilty of some transgression at somewhere against conservatism, except Santorum. See you tomorrow.
That was such an outright bold-faced lie. It's unbelievable. I have not, and plus other reasons, other experiences that I had with Rush Limbaugh and his show. That I haven't really listened to him, and I actually haven't listened to him since that time, because that was false. We know how the Florida elections the primary elections were going towards, and then we see how they turned out. And I think a big part of it, because we do know that Rush Limbaugh does have a lot of influence in the Republican Party and with conservatives, that I think it was it was a ploy to try to finally get Romney, who was, of course, the establishment's pick, for the nomination. And he was part of it. I mean, one thing I don't like about Rush is he claims to be a conservative first and a Republican second, and I think he really illustrated by doing that certainly is not the case.
Well, let me throw something out about the media. I'm going to do a plug for RT. RT is on Dish Network, and I go to a local round table for their buffet, really good cheap food, and so I'm like, woohoo, watching RT.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Russian Times.
Russian Times?
Yeah.
Well, no, actually it's called Russian Television. That's what it's short for. But I don't know how they did this. I don't know who's funding them. But these kids, and I'm calling them kids, okay? They're 28, 34. Oh, my gosh, they're exposing the things that need to be said that the major networks are not. This one girl, her last name is boring. She said, I don't know why they have so many redheads. She's another redhead. She's hot,
oh, yeah?
Beautiful. It's like, Yeah, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I got to
think about Red Hands, I must admit.
So anyway, Yeah, so she's doing this thing called prime interest. She's hammering the Federal Reserve, hammering left and right. And then, of course, she talks about the news of the day. I'm like, oh my gosh, I want to call her and say, will you marry me? Anyway, but she has got it nailed. I can't believe what they're exposing. And they were internet, and then they grew, and now they're on Dish Network. And I'm like, oh my gosh, why? And of course, Snowden. All right, they're a big fan of Snowden. Rallies in New York. You know, of course, Fox doesn't show that. Fox is, what's Fox saying about Snowden? Oh, he's a criminal. He should be prosecuted with full extent of the law. What law? He's defending what? The Fourth Amendment. Oh, that's right. International manhunt. The biggest manhunt in centuries. It's like, what? Are we that bad, Fox? I mean, I enjoy some of your morning news as I'm getting ready for work, but what's going on here? Why is there such a stark difference of opinion? I don't understand. And so this is, you know, the internet is causing a revolution. Powers that be don't know how to deal with it.
Oh, okay, yeah. She's got long red hair.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I just googled her.
She is pretty.
I know.
Red,
like, I mean,
hair.
I'm telling you. Oh my
god! I couldn't help myself. Because I've got a weakness for red hair. Not a weakness, but I mean, I've red hair is my favorite hair for on a woman. So as it says,
yeah,
got the Irish party.
Yeah, well, I've had a problem with blonde.
If it's not too red,
that's
if it's bronze red, I like it. Dark red, I like it. Yeah, I don't like the real flaming red. It just makes me look like, look at her. I don't know how she looks, but I mean, I like the red
Google
hair.
Prime interest and look at images. There we are, some guys digressing here, thinking about beautiful women.
that's okay too.
Well, I gotta get back to be somewhat professional here. You know, I'm sorry, Google eyes, but. All right, so Archie, it's a bunch of kids. I mean, yeah, I'm in my 40s, and these kids are, why do I say kids? I used to call the kids when I was like 28 and 30, and I kind of found offense with that. But they're going at it. They're getting, oh my gosh, they're hammering it, you know, and they're about 70% professional. You can see the little quirks, but they're getting the truth out. You know, these people, this group, we got to have somebody from Archie on your show because they reveal to the American people what's really going on. You know, BBC, I got a buddy, okay? He wrote in Ron Paul. He just happened upon me. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. We talked for about an hour in health and all this stuff. And he wrote in Ron Paul. I'm like, what? You? Anyway, he is constantly listening to BBC. He learns more about America, what's really going on from the BBC, than he does the regular news channels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is going on here? I really respect the guy.
You seem pretty connected with this stuff, Kelly, so if you would just do me a favor sometime, if you could find a place or a station or what have you where I can get Ireland's TV, then let me know, because I've been searching to be able to get, like, some Irish channels or Ireland TV or something like that for a long time, and I've not been able to find it. So if you know anything where I could find some, let me know. Just send me an email or something.
You can probably Google international TVs, and there's this software that you can use as a toolbar in your browsers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having Mozilla or if you're having IE, they will give you international stations. So if you Google, I'm not saying you're going to find it within the first 10 results, but you might have to link up, but you'll find it. It'll be free.
Well, cool. Yeah, I like to do that because, you know, that's one of my strong interest is Ireland, you know, things of that nature. So.
Hmm. Well, they have international channels. But I'm going to have to let you guys go. I've got some other things I have planned.
No,
all
understood.
Right.
I appreciate you coming to the show, Joe, and give us your thoughts and things of that nature. And, of course, you know, you're definitely welcome back to talk about other, you know, on other shows that we have. And please go to, if you're on Facebook, check out the page.
Like I said, you can't find me. I have no Facebook, no Twitter, no LinkedIn.
You are unfindable.
Yeah, well, yeah. For now, anyway.
Well,
we found you tonight. I really enjoy you, Joe.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, just share the link for folks who aren't as unfindable, and if they'd like to check it out, that's fine too. So, but you may know all folks that are unfindable. So.
Okay. Let's take it easy, guys. It was good to talk to you. All right?
You too. Take care. Thank you very much. You have a good
night.
Take
it easy. Bye-bye.
You too. Well, Kelly, I do see that it is towards the bottom of the hour, so we'll go ahead and get ready to end the show tonight, the extended portion here, and get things for the archives and start planning for next week. So if you've got any last-minute things that you'd like to bring up, and, of course, thank you very much for coming on to the show, go ahead. You have the floor.
Well, it's real simple. Guys like Joe, okay? They're 1 out of 100 that'll call into a show like this, all right? But they're everywhere. The grassroots, they're there. We're getting together. We're causing things to happen. You know, the 10th Amendment guy, oh, my gosh. You know, what's happening here is people are waking up. They're getting empowered. They're getting into action. They're connecting with people. They're unifying. And we're causing a positive change here. Do we have enough time to finish this great work we're starting? But I'm seeing it. I'm seeing people getting together, and we hopefully will get together. We'll get the power. We'll get things changed. I'm just encouraged by Joe and the intent. I'm being repetitive here because I'm so excited. Okay, so I'm so excited. Just maybe I'll call in another day.
Well, that sounds good.
Good.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what's that? I'm sorry.
It sounds good.
It sounds good. Yeah, from people are like, where's that coming from? It's listen back at the other archives. To the archives. That's right. Of course, we're working on some other
Virgil
things.
Good.
Virgil Good, definitely. And then we'll get things together for next week. But of course. Kelly, we talked about the grassroots, and of course, Bard's Logic Political Talk is the grassroots We the People show, and check it out on Facebook, and also there's a page and also the group I look to join. Also, there is the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which, yes, I will admit, I do have to do some updating to. recently, I haven't unfortunately had the opportunity to get to it very much lately, at least in the past week, where I've wanted to get some updates gone there. But check it out, join the group, like the page, appreciate, and of course, share this link with folks so they can listen to the show too. And they also not only can share the link, they can also download it once they get there to listen to the show. So I'd like to thank everyone who listened live, and also for those of you who listen to the show here on the archives. And what I'd like for the folks, and I'd ask the folks who do listen to the show in the archives, is I do know some of the time and some of the time zones, 10 p.m. Eastern is late for us East Coast folks, but it'd be great to hear from you live as well for all you people listening to the archives to add on to the conversation. So I will end tonight as I do every night, and that will be by the song by Aubrey Ashburn. And, of course, you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com, where you can hear more of her music. And so I'd like to thank you again. Say goodnight, all. Take care, and look forward to seeing you again. Good night.